My family and I drove to Omaha for Thanksgiving. Now, we drove out on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. Do you remember that day? Remember what happened on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving? It was a big storm. So we had been watching the weather report for the days leading up to it. And it said that the snow was going to go to the north and down through Des Moines into Omaha would be fine, just rain, no problem. So we head out on Wednesday morning. So we're driving along and we get across the Iowa border and it starts to rain. Now it's no problem. Now at that point, my coffee starts kicking in and it's about lunchtime. So Lana says, hey, there's an exit right there with this little Arby's. I'm thinking, you know, I checked my bladder retention level. Checked my hunger level, and I said, you know, I'm not really in the mood for thinly sliced beef, so let's just go one more exit, and we'll see what's there. Well, you can guess what happened. As soon as we pass by that exit, everything changes. The temperature drops, and the highway freezes over. We were in park on the freeway in the middle of Iowa. Now, you know that you are in trouble when the 18-wheeler in front of you that is stopped starts moving sideways spontaneously. 2 hours and 8 miles later, we came to the next exit. Now, did I mention my bladder earlier? Whew! That was a tough trip. Something that should have just been a six-hour drive turned into an eight-and-a-half-hour ordeal through ice and dismal rain. And as we're driving along, I'm thinking to myself, why am I doing this to myself and putting my family at risk? And then I remembered, it was my destination. We were heading to Omaha for a family reunion. It was the first time this family had been together in years. And so knowing what my destination was kept me going on the journey. Now, journeys are like that, aren't they? You know, all this year, I've been talking about spiritual formation as a journey. And we have been talking as a community about how we want to journey deeper into the heart of God, how we want God to fill us up that we can overflow to people around us. And sometimes the journey gets hard. Sometimes journeys don't go the way that we want them to go. Unexpected detours pop up. Someone hurts us. We lose someone. Health fails. You know, stuff happens, doesn't it? And sometimes it's easy to lose hope, and we wonder if the journey is really worth it. Well, in this season of Advent, as we've been looking at this theme of hope, and we come to this text in Isaiah chapter 35, we come to this language of journey once again. And Isaiah paints for us two things. He shows us a picture of hope. And he shows us a pathway of how to get to that. It's really in two parts. And I want to begin with the end. As Isaiah shows us in verses 8 through 10, what the pathway, what the journey looks like. So if you'd open your Bibles to Isaiah 35, verses 8 through 10. While you're getting there, let's get the context. Remember, Isaiah is a prophet. And a prophet is a guy who preaches to the kings of Judah. He had been preaching his whole life to the kings of Judah and telling them, hey, if you don't straighten up, if you don't stop this corrupt government and the oppression of the poor, messing around with all these foreign gods and idols, if you don't get on the right path, bad things are going to happen to Jerusalem. Well, he preached and preached and preached until finally he saw that it was inevitable, that Babylon was going to come in and wipe out Jerusalem, and that the people would be taken away into exile. They were there for 70 years. And when Babylon came, it wiped them out, tore down the temple, knocked down the walls, and jackals, wild creatures, were just roaming through the streets of Jerusalem. And so in this picture of doom and gloom, Isaiah changes his tone, and he starts painting a picture of the future, a vision of hope. And he says that at the end of the exile, the people will be able to return. They will be able to make a journey from Babylon to Jerusalem. And look at how he talks about this journey in verse 8. He says, a highway shall be there, and it shall be called the Holy Way. The unclean shall not travel on it, but it shall be for God's people. No traveler, not even fools, shall go astray. No lion shall be there, nor shall any ravenous beast come upon it. They shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return, and come to Zion with singing. Now Zion is Jerusalem, okay? Come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. You see, in order to get back to Jerusalem, they actually had to travel hundreds of miles on foot. It would be a treacherous journey. Difficult roads, harsh weather, and there would be enemies there who would want them to not succeed in their journey. You can read about the story in Ezra and Nehemiah when they finally made that journey. So let me ask you right now, in your journey right now, have you found some difficulty along the way? Have you found some things that maybe trip you up or make the journey more difficult than you thought? Well, my encouragement for us today from this part of Isaiah 35 is to be encouraged that if you are on a journey that God has set you on, God's promise is that He will be with you every step of the way. And that we as a community are called to make this journey of spiritual formation together. And you know what's the greatest piece of hope from this passage for me? It says, Isaiah says that when the people of God journey together, that even fools won't go astray. That means there's hope for me. Everybody will make it if we do this together, according to God. Now, how do we persevere on the journey, though? We have to keep the destination in mind, because it's easy to want to give up. So what is the vision of hope that Isaiah paints? I love this passage. This is verses 1 through 7 now. Isaiah paints this picture of hope, and he does it in a poem. You know, Isaiah, the prophet, preached in poetry, and this particular passage of 1 through 7 is what's called a chiastic poem. Say that with me. Chiastic poem. Chiastic means climactic or circular. And what it does is parts 1 and 5 say the same thing, and then parts 2 and 4 say the same thing, and then right in the middle is the climax and the point of it. So let me read it in the way it's supposed to be read. Follow with me now. Verse 1 says this. This is the picture. It's a climax thing. Verse 1, he says, the wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. He's talking about what Jerusalem will be like when they return, okay? He said, the wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. The desert shall rejoice and bloom. Like the crocus, it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given to it. Now, Lebanon was a fertile region on the coastal plain, so it'll be like Lebanon. The majesty of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. So in this part, the desert breaks into bloom, which is a beautiful thing. Now jump down to the middle of verse 6. For waters shall break forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand shall become like a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water. The haunt of jackals shall become a swamp. The grass shall become reeds and rushes. Jerusalem had been destroyed. Jackals were running. So what's the first ring of the vision of hope? Is that the land itself will be restored. What was once unfertile land will be made to be fertile and useful once again. Now, that's the first ring. Now we move to the second ring. Go back now to verse 3. Strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are fearful of heart, be strong, do not fear. So what's going to happen, this vision of hope, is that discouraged people, oppressed people, are going to be encouraged. Now it's people. Now jump down to verse 5. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. And the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the speechless sing for joy. See, the second ring in this vision of hope is that people will be transformed. People will be made whole. Now we come to the middle. Look what he says. Here is your God. He will come with vengeance, with terrible recompense. He will come and save you. Boom, there it is. the climax of the poem, God is at the center. Now, he says he'll come with vengeance and terrible recompense. Well, what that really is saying is justice. God will bring justice. So here's the vision, I think, that Isaiah is painting, this picture of hope. He's telling the people, he's telling us, if God is at the center of everything you do, then things will start to change. See, I see in this a picture of the overflow principle. I see the overflow principle everywhere. But this is really there. That if we, as individuals and as a community, will align ourselves with God and the ways of Jesus and allow God to take control, and we follow the ways of God, then we will start to change within our own heart, and we will spill into each other. And then this community will spill into Anoka County. And Anoka County will spill into Minnesota, and Minnesota into the United States, and the United States to the world. See, the vision of hope is that Jesus wants to change the world through us, if we would put Christ at the center. Now, why do I think this is what Isaiah is saying? Is because you remember in the gospel that we read, in Matthew 11, John the Baptist was not sure if Jesus was really the Messiah. And how did Jesus say, what was his proof that the kingdom was breaking out through Jesus? He quotes Isaiah. You remember in 11:4, he says, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them." See, this Advent season, my prayer is that we would not give up on our journey of spiritual formation. That we would keep before us this hope that God can actually change things in us, through us, and around us. Now, I want to give you a Christmas present. I want to show you a video. It's just about 5 minutes long, but it is wonderful. And as we watch it, I want you to pay attention to the faces of the people. And then we'll talk about it right a little bit at the end. So let's see if this will work. Go ahead and hit play. Okay. get chills every time I watch that. An ordinary space, like a food court, when God is brought at the center of it, it transforms the space. It's just a simple, practical little picture of what we're talking about. So my prayer for us this Advent season is that we would keep hope alive that Jesus is still in the business of transforming people and communities and the world, that the kingdom of God is at work among us. So let's keep that hope together. Would you stand with me as we continue to worship?